Blog Talk Radio.
Rah. Killer Mike Bamboo. You already know. Yeah. No surprise, I'm from a gangbang culture, but we can keep it civil or pull a thang-thang on ya. Southern California where the sun don't quit, intergenerational gang so sons don't quit. But immediately you see that the problems that's in my city are secondary to what's propelling it in my city. I mean really break it down, take poor black and brown, educate them poor, take the jobs from out the town, then inundate them with the date of drugs and dumb TV, locked into a zoo and hunted daily by the police. Then you get a group of youth who know they don't belong, then they gather up and organize a number up strong. But see, the failure isn't seeing that the problem ain't the gang, it's the situation in the communities where we hang. So I'm so pro-gang, it might scare a motherfucker, cause I fixed the misconception that the enemies are brothers.
Bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, upset the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, homie, we been set up.
I tell them, I went from a street gang thing, then I joined a military fleet marine force thing. From a little bitty gang in the south of Los Angeles to dragging bodies out of their house to help a government who hell bent on keeping money spent on the missile. The reality's the difference between them shits is little. We had the objective of arming up over money, and they had the objective of arming up over money. And we told kids join us, we the truth. Lies about protecting our black to get recruits. Then we found out we getting killed for a hood, and we don't own a single speck of dirt on that hood. Whether in a zone down south in Decatur, or in the flatlands off of Lenox and La Brea, or in a low-rise project in Chicago, big money come in and buy up our body.
Show your sets up, we about to upset the setup. We about to upset the setup. Up to upset the setup. Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup. Upset the setup. Up to upset the setup.
I do it for the Crips and the Blooders. BGF brothers, the real Freeway Ricky Ross and Chris Dutters. I do my thing for Hoover, I represent for Ford. So my folk and my people, so they set to support. Support Amina Matthews, she might say the shot. So maybe next summer, no mama's gotta cry. Cause maybe next summer, nobody gotta die. Hell, even if we fail, somebody gotta try. The only way the system rule is somebody gotta lie. And the lie they told is old, they base it on your race. They separate you black, you brown, you yellow, and white face. Then we further separate by joining gangs and legislate. That our neighborhoods are now at war like we are separate states. So the police occupy our hood to keep down all the drama. So the Starbucks they just built is comfortable for soccer mama. And American apparel comfortable for all the hipsters. And it's zero tolerance for all you spicks and you niggas and you chinks and you crackers. And it ain't about who's whiter and it ain't about who's blacker, but the money is a factor. And the factor is the factor we've got moved up out the hood. When starvation is present and absent is a job, a man will simply starve or he will form a mob. If you should form a mafia, then you should think Sicilian. Buy the hood for real. Every block, every bill, every bill, every bill. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. Bill, bill. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. On the system, on the system.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
damn way it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free land, revolutionary ingredients. I'm your whole Blue Mind Secure, a Georgia University Radio, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal, to eradicate functional illiteracy among new African prisoners. Our second goal, to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities, whereas our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. And our overall goal is to transform the prison to a slave complex, which is the prison system to begin institutional learning through education of means. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On September 25th, 1861, the Secretary of the Navy authorized the enlistment of slaves. In 1934, Baba Abafuma was born. Baba Abafuma was a former New African political prisoner, one of the founding members of the New African People Organization, NAPO, another founding member of Malcolm McGrawley, MAGM. He held a varied position in the prison of Republican Africa as the vice president. He was an overall advocate for the people. He supported RNLF when they were incarcerated. He also led various New African scout troops in the Birmingham area and found various other organizations. On September 26, 1862, at a second cabinet meeting, President Lincoln called for a coordinated national effort to find a play to colonize blacks. In 1962, Abdul-Lugaba Shakur, currently a New African political prisoner, co-founded Jordan University, author, advocate, activist, poet, organized, so much more, were born. On September 27, 1822, Arounds All Rebels, first new African U.S. senators, were born free in Fayetteville, North Carolina. 1862, the first Louisiana Native Guards, the first new African regiment to receive official recognition, mustering to the Army. The regiment was composed of free new Africans of New Orleans. In 1877, John Mercer Langston was named minister to Haiti. In 1940, new African leader protested discrimination in the armed forces and war industry at the White House meeting with President Roosevelt. Well, today, that's September 28th, David Walker, who was an eloquent writer and author of the appeal against slavery, born in 1785. Also on this day, 1829, David Walker's appeal, a radical anti-slavery pamphlet, was published in Boston by David Walker. The appeal denounced slavery and called for a slave revolt. In 1833, Reverend Lemuel Haynes, Revolutionary War veteran and pioneer, a new African preacher, died in Granville, New York at the age of 88. In 1868, massacre in St. Lunger Parish, Louisiana, Republicans said Democratic terrorists killed 200 or 300 New Africans. In 1928, Coco Taylor, a.k.a. Cora Walton, the legendary female blues vocalist, was born, she's known as the Queen of the Blues. In 1950, Babu Kalamuwendo, two-time president of the Republic of Africa, currently holding Minister of Finance, was born. September 29th, 1942, the Booker T. Washington, the first U.S. merchant ship commanded by a new African captain, Hugh Moguez, launched at Wilmington, Delaware. On September 1750, Crispin Attucks escaped from slavery in Farmington, Massachusetts. 1863, in a White House conference, a delegation of whites from Missouri and Kansas asked for the immediate emancipation of Missouri slaves. Lincoln told them that their set was a little too fast for him and that he still favored gradual rather than immediate emancipation. In 1919, whites massacred over 100 new Africans in Lane, Arkansas after the sharecropper demanded fair price for crops. On October 1st through the 3rd, 1919, a race riot occurred in Lane, Phillips County, Arkansas. 5 whites and 25 to 50 new Africans reported killed. In 1960, Nigeria gained its independence. Those are a couple of events that happened in history during this week. You know, there's plenty more, but there's just some that I just want to share with everybody. First of all, let's thank everybody who was part of our broadcast in 2014. I want to salute everybody who organized, educated, and educated in the community respectfully. You know, and I want to salute everybody. I want to say a shout out to all the new African political prisoners, all the new African POWs, the Black Liberation political, all the political prisoners that are currently still fighting and struggling, putting information out there for our man and masters, our people. And I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Barbara Ray Wimbush.
Brother.
Yes, sir. How you doing? How you doing, Barbara? How you doing tonight, man?
Doing good. Good to hear that history too.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. You know, first I would like to salute you and commend you for your work. I'd like to thank you for coming to our platform to share your knowledge and understanding. Thank you for the work you're going to do in the past, the present, and the future, right? And First, I'll tell the people a little bit about yourself in regard to who you are before we get into the meat of the situation. Just tell the people a little about yourself.
I teach at Morgan State University, where I'm director of the Institute of Urban Research. My degree is in psychology from the University of Chicago. Did my undergraduate work at an HBCU, sent two of my three children to HBCUs. My university, in fact, we all went to the same university, Oakwood University in Huntsville, Alabama. Originally from Cleveland, Ohio, now in Baltimore, Maryland. That's enough. I've done other stuff, but that's enough.
Okay. That's a beautiful thing. You know, I want to ask you a question about this, sorry, Kyler, a couple of questions. You know, first off, what actually is the textbook definition of psychology? You know what I'm saying? What does that actually mean to people who listen who don't know? What does that actually mean?
Well, you know, psychology is as old as the human being. The word psych, the first part of it, simply means the mind or the spirit. And ology, of course, means study of. So you have biology, the study of life, theology, the study of religion and God. So psychology studies the human behavior, the behavior of human beings in groups as well as individuals. There's also even animal psychology. I just picked up my new issue of National Geographic, and they were talking about, we think sometimes that animals don't have feelings, and the cover story is about how animals do have feelings. So, I always tell African people that we need to have respect for nature. This European idea of hunting animals and killing them for sport is something that I've never really understood. So psychology is the study of human behavior as well as animal behavior. That's basic. That's an simple definition of it.
Okay. When it comes to African people, what is African psychology, and how does it differ or even relate to what we're going to term as a European psychology? How do they even relate to each other? Do they even relate, or what's the correlation, and what's the understanding of African psychology, and what is it actually utilized for? What's the best way to use it, rather?
Well, it absolutely is different from, European psychology. Back in 1968, there was the beginning of the Association of Black Psychologists, and Wade Nobles wrote, a psychologist out in California wrote this very important paper called Toward a Black or African Psychology. And his argument was, and I agree with it, is that black people fundamentally are different from white people in terms of their behavior towards a variety of things. And he said we have to have a study of African people from an African point of view rather than a European point of view. You have like famous white psychologists like Sigmund Freud, Carl Rogers, B.F. Skinner, and all of these, but none of them know anything about or knew anything about black folks. What Europeans always try to do, not only with psychology, but with history, mathematics, literature, whatever, what they try to do is say that they are the standard by which everyone else is judged. You know, so, you know, the idea that white people out of this tiny little place in Europe can then judge, you know, African people, you know, Asian people, Native people is ridiculous. But there's a certain amount of arrogance to even say that. African psychology, we focus specifically the way we move, you know, the way we talk, the way we just go about playing basketball. All of that is African. You know, our rhythm, you know, when we greet each other, you know, we take sometimes 2 minutes to greet each other. That's African. And how we raise our children. I wrote a book called The Warrior Method. And, you know, it's a book about how to raise black boys in a, you know, a healthy way. And sometimes we look at our children, you know, in terms of child psychology, sometimes we look at black children as merely chocolate-covered white children. They're different. And so what black psychology, African psychology does is that we, you know, help understand ourselves, write about ourselves from a perspective of being an African psychologist and looking at our people as basically African.
Okay. Okay. So,
Go ahead. I remember a white boy once. He's a psychologist, a white psychologist, and he said, Ray, you're always talking about black psychology, African psychology. He said, black people in this country aren't from Africa. I said, well, black people aren't from Vienna, Austria either, but you will use Sigmund Freud, who was from Vienna, Austria, to try to understand black people from this country. I mean, that shut them up, but it's the truth. White people think their knowledge is universal and applicable to everyone, and it simply isn't. But their arrogance makes them believe, and then they practice. You know, we know that black children learn differently from white children. This is why black children in public school systems are not learning in large part, not totally, but in large part, because the methods of teaching black children are very, very different, you know, from teaching white children. I'll say more about that later on, but we can stop there. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's the information. I want to know from y'all, would you consider African psychology a liberation ideology for overall African people? And if so, why would you consider that?
Oh, absolutely. Because we talk about freedom. You know, George, the great prophet, you know, George Clinton once said in one of his songs, he said, you know, free your mind and your butt will follow. I'm editing that a little bit. But he said, free your mind and your butt will follow. And I think that, you know, what we, you know, oftentimes we have to liberate our mind. And African psychology tells, how does a Clarence Thomas become a Clarence Thomas? You know, how does a Ben Carson become a Ben Carson? You know, when you study history, you look at, you know, we just passed the anniversary of the bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama. Well, just one of the four girls that was killed that day by these white supremacists was a friend of a sister that lived just a few blocks away from a church. And her name was Condoleezza Rice. another one of the girls that was killed also had a friend that lived not far from there and was raised in Birmingham, and her name was Angela Davis. So you see Condoleezza Rice, who all of her life kind of did what white people said, became a conservative Secretary of State. But you see Angela Davis, helping, to help the Soledad brothers, that, helped them mightily. So as a psychologist, as an African psychologist, I have to ask myself, how in the world, just 6 or 7 blocks from each other, you produce, an environment produces an Angela Davis and a Condoleezza Rice? These people politically are opposite of each other. One dealt with liberation. The other one dealt with incarceration, psychological incarceration. So what we believe that our work, our research, our practice has to be liberating to African people. The Association of Black Psychologists, which is our organization in this country, right after Katrina and other disasters, we sent psychologists down to New Orleans to help out with that disaster. So we try to get out of the room and, into the field where our people are.
True indeed. Could you tell us some certain ways that we can, for instance, we understand that the majority of the American academic system, right, by being in America. So we've been exposed to a lot of the Westernized mindset of thinking. Can you tell us a blueprint or tell us certain ideas, certain things to do to put us in a African mind or re-Africanize us to the way of thinking so that we can seek and work toward that liberation through the African psychology?
Yeah, I mean, brother, that's probably the question that all African psychologists ask. How do we liberate our people mentally? Again, free your mind and the rest will follow. I tell people to read. I say, if you can't read, have somebody read to you. You can now, buy books that you can listen to if you can't read. We need to practice more, a deeper knowledge of who we are as an African people. I was talking to somebody today, a guy, Dr. Carr over in Arkansas, not Jeff, Greg Carr, but another Carr. And it was interesting that at the beginning, right after, so-called freedom from after the Civil War, black folk almost immediately formed reading clubs. And they would get together once a month, once a week in many cases, teach each other to read and then read books. This is why reading is fundamental. And that's why they don't want us to read and, our oppressors. And these reading clubs, this is before television, before social media, all of that, radio even. They existed and still exist, but they don't exist like they were 120, 145 years ago. They don't exist like that. So I tell people, you got to read. That's number one to help free your African mind. And read books that are going to tell you about your history and is going to tell you about yourself. Read John Henry Clark. Read Chancellor Williams, The Destruction of Black Civilization. Read Renoko Rashidi. Read Francis Cress Welding. And, these are books that are essential to start freeing yourself. The first black book I ever read was when I was in the 8th grade, and I read this book by Brother Richard Wright called Black Boy. And that book, even though I was in the 8th grade, 12, 13 years old, it just opened up a whole world for me, and I subsequently read that, every day, at least 30 minutes. So I think reading is fundamental. I think the other thing is the joint organizations that are there for the liberation of our people, Jericho Movement. There's, you know, many groups. I don't want to name all of them, but there's movements all over this country. You should join something. And like Marimba Ani, the author of Yorubu, says, every day you should ask yourself, have I done anything for the liberation of black people? Just one person, you know, just if I help one person, did I do anything? And I try to ask myself that at the end of every my work day, too.
True indeed, true indeed. That's a beautiful thing. I look at your history, right? You've been around such phenomenal African social scientists, Dr. Francis Wilson, Dr. Bobby Wright, you know, just to name a few, right? You know, what type of relationship or what type of inspiration motivation did you get from them, and what type of most information did you give to them? You know what I'm saying, in regards to the overall understanding of our particular struggle in regards to relation to our African psychology.
Well, you mentioned Bobby Wright and Francis Gresham Wellesley. They were singularly two major influences on my life. I went to school with Bobby thousands of years ago at the University of Chicago, where I was just a couple of weeks ago, in fact. Bobby, and this is 1970, 52 years ago, had a master's degree in computer science. He was the only person that I knew at that time, black person that I knew at that time, that had a degree in computer science, and told me, this is 1970, he said by the year 2000, mind you now, that was 30 years away, you know, he said, people are going to be carrying computers around in their pocket. And I don't know how old you are, brother, but I remember when computers fit in huge rooms that were cooled off because they would get so hot, the IBM 360. And when Bobby said, we're going to be carrying computers around in our pocket, I said, Bobby, come on, man. These things are huge things that Ray, you watch. Well, look what all of us have now. Cell phones. Those are nothing but computers. They tell us where to go. They keep our bank accounts. They give us information at our fingertips. He was prophetic. Bobby wrote one of the most important papers in African psychology, The Psychopathic Racist Personality. And that paper still is one of the most brilliant papers I've ever read. Bobby helped me with statistics. You know, I eventually taught statistics, but he told me, very important that you understand statistics as well as information about computers. And I still to this day try to do that. What can I say about Dr. Francis Gresham Wellesley? I met Dr. Wellesley in 1981. I can remember it. That's 41 years ago. And one of my students, when I was teaching at Alabama A&M University, gave me this paper called The Crest Theory of Color Confrontation. And I put it on my desk. It was a little small paper, but I didn't, you know, really pay attention to it. And one afternoon, I was getting ready to teach a class, and I was sitting at my desk at A&M, and I picked up the paper and read it. It was only about 8 or 9 pages long. And that paper changed my life. I remember getting on the telephone. And I don't know if you remember when you used to dial 411 for the operator. But I dialed 411 for the operator, got to D.C., and got Francis Gresham Wellesley's telephone number, called her, and she actually answered the phone. That was the first time I ever spoke to her. And I told her how much that paper had influenced me, that she and I would become friends. And she laughed, and we had a good conversation. I never met her. And long story short, she and I became very fast friends to the point that, you know, 2 years ago, I edited a volume after she made her transition a few years ago and included people who knew her. So it came from that little paper, you know, 40-something years ago to a book about her called The Osiris Papers. Long journey, brother.
Yes, sir. That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. You know, my next question is, how can you utilize African psychology to combat white supremacy and racism? How can you utilize it as a tool, you know what I'm saying, to get away from it? Or a tool to basically build your own system, or whatever you want to call it, refer to it as. Right? How can you deviate from using that system?
Well, see, I think, first of all, we have to liberate our language. You know, see, white supremacy is not just like what happened on January 6th at the Capitol. White supremacy is making you say things, and you ask yourself, why did I say that? You don't even know. So, for example, I don't use the term minority. Black people should never refer to themselves as a minority. Why? Because we are the minority. Globally, white people only comprise roughly 8% of the world's population, just 8%. But they have us calling ourselves minority. I've been in rooms where there's a bunch of white people, and a black person will get up and ask a question, says, well, as a minority, they're talking about themselves, as a minority, I'd like to know this. You should never, and white people, if I was a white person and I said, boy, we got those black people, those brown people, those yellow people, those, you know, red people calling themselves minority. So we got to liberate language. White people are a minority. And I bet you you'll never hear them call themselves a minority. And so I think you got to liberate language. That's one way you use African psychology. Whenever a white person asks me a trick question, which they do oftentimes if I'm speaking someplace, they'll try to ask me a trick question. Here goes one that's very popular. Dr. Winbush, will you denounce Minister Farrakhan? And instead of me immediately answering, and Neely Fuller, who is Francis Cresswell's teacher, tells us to do it. Never answer a white person's question directly. Ask them what they mean. So when white people ask me, will you denounce Minister Farrakhan? I said, why should I denounce Minister Farrakhan? And then they'll say something stupid like, he's anti-Semite. He's an anti-Semitic person. I said, well, what is an anti-Semite? I don't know what that is. Well, they'll say, well, you know, somebody who's against Jewish people. And then I'll immediately say, well, Arabs are Semitic people, so I don't know what you mean by anti-Semitic. Arab people are Semitic people. People from Iran are Semitic people. What do you mean? I'm confused about what you say. So I think that what you do with using African psychology is to make sure that you are always aware of how white supremacy is trying to make you become its tool, and you reverse that, and you can do that. I mean, clearly, as you know, African psychology can be used in how we write, but I don't expect all black folk to write something, but I think how you liberate. I was telling you about this brother named Odell Carr. He's a minister with a PhD living in Arkansas, Hope, Arkansas. And I had a long conversation with him today. And he's got a brand new book called Resurrecting the Black Mind. And what he does in this book is genius. He takes the Bible, which confuses a lot of us. And I could really get into that, but it confuses a lot of us. And he integrates it with black history. So he quotes John Henry Clark. He quotes Chancellor Williams and other Renoko Rashidi and all of this. And see, a lot of times we have in our minds how white supremacy and how it is, really like captured us psychologically. If you think that Jesus is white, your mind needs to be free. I speak in a lot of black churches, and if, when I see a white Jesus hanging up on a cross or something like that, I said, look, we need to talk about this, you know. And I think that, you know, knowing who you are, understanding the language that is used to keep us in prison is a very important thing. You've heard me quote before, Brother Stephen Biko, the great South African actor, the greatest weapon, and that's one of my favorite quotations. He says the greatest weapon, not one of the greatest weapons, but the greatest weapon in the hand of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. Because white people as a minority, they can only keep the system of white supremacy going by trying to capture our mind. And they've been successful in doing it in a variety of ways.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I agree with that. As far as to the mind control.
It is. It's through TV. It's to, you know, just a variety of ways of how, and again, I'm not saying don't look at television or don't go to a movie, whatever. You know, I saw this film, The Woman King, last week, and I've seen it a couple of times, and there was a group of black people, and they're very anti-black people. They're black, but they're anti-Pan-African, and they've been telling people, don't go see this film. This is one of the few films that shows African agriculture. It shows, you know, African religious ceremonies and us communing with the ancestors and all of this stuff. It was directed by a black woman. Not every film that we got to go see, you know, has to be a documentary, but it was just beautiful to see, you know, black folks, you know, and white people not being the center of everything that we look at. Keith Beauchamp is a good friend of mine, and he's doing this film about Emmett Till that's coming out in a few weeks. And they, a lot of black folks, well, I'm not going to go see it because I don't like to see black violence porn. And when I saw the trailer in the theater, they actually had to put up there, the director, who is black, said, we are not going to show any black violence. Like black people get beat up and beaten or killed in this film because we want to focus on the characters of Emmett Till and Mamie Till. And I welcome that because our people, we can do, you know, we can liberate ourselves without showing all the violence in our communities, especially perpetrated by white people towards us, you know. So.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I know you mentioned a couple of times that we can read certain things, right? What are some of the things that you recommend that an individual read, and why do you recommend that?
One book I definitely recommend to read is The ISIS Papers by Dr. Francis Cress-Wells. As a psychology book, it's one of the most liberating books. She wrote that book in 1991. And the book is prophetic. She had predicted the what she called the effeminization of black men. She had predicted that people, that there would be an increase of violence against black people in this country, which there has been. Mind you, she wrote it in 1991, right before the presidency of Bill Clinton, when most black folks said, oh, we got all types of stuff, even though mass incarceration was going on at that time with his so-called three strikes, you're out, and all this super predator mess that they were talking about. Right before she made her transition, she predicted that Donald Trump was going to win the presidency, and people didn't believe it, but she was right on that. So what I like about ISIS Papers, it gives you an introduction to how the system of white supremacy works. And as Neely Fuller, her teacher, says, if you do not understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works, you will be confused by everything that you think you understand. And I think that a lot of us are confused about what's going on in the world. They're very confused about it. I was kind of disappointed. In fact, I was very disappointed. I saw a couple of days ago a black gun club named after Geauga Geronimo Pratt was marching against immigration down in Texas. As they don't say, we don't want Mexicans in here. And then had the nerve to use the term or call their club the Geronimo Pratt, you know, gun club. Well, you know, I ain't trying to drop a name, but I knew Geronimo. He would never march against Mexicans coming into this country. He was a Pan-African. And he, as you know, he made his transition while he was on the continent. So, yeah, that, those are black folk that are confused. And we have to, and white supremacy deliberately confuses us. That's what it wants us to do. It divides us and it tries to confuse us. And we oftentimes fall for it. And so I think ISIS Papers is a good book. I think another great book, if you don't know anything about black history, read Chancellor Williams' book, The Destruction of Black Civilization. It's one of the most important books that you can read. It starts roughly at 4000 BC. It goes all the way up to the 19th century about the history. Like, we have to ask the question, why did blacks undergo enslavement? What did we do in this world, or what was done to us in this world to cause the enslavement of African people and the oppression of African people? Another book that I would recommend, and the name is too long to quote here, but we oftentimes just call it The Code by Neely Fuller, because it tells you the structure of the system of white supremacy. So in other words, Neely Fuller, who was Dr. Wells' teacher, he tells you what white supremacy is and how it manifests itself. And then Francis tells you, why is there white supremacy? And the reason why white people are so violent towards black people is simply because they're a minority and they're terrified of us. And I've had people say, oh, they're not scared of us. Look how they kill us. That's why they kill us, because they are afraid of us. And I think that, again, we have to liberate our minds by looking at things such as, when I see a Trayvon Martin kill, or Breonna Taylor, or Michael Brown, or George Jackson, I don't just see that person being killed. I see all of the children that those people might have had that could have found a cure for cancer, a cure for AIDS, or something like that. They're not just killing us. You know, they're killing people, the children of those people that they killed that were never born. And so we have to start thinking like this, that an entire generation and several generations are cut off every time they kill us. And I think The Code by Neely Fuller is one of the books that help. And then one other book I'm going to name, and then there's a list that I have online that gives a bibliography. Another book is Yorugu, Y-U-R-U-G-U, by Marimba Anee, who lives in Atlanta. It is probably one of the most, you don't read Yorugu, you study it. And what Marimba does is analyze every institution in the European world. It tells how all of these institutions are geared to expand white supremacy. So last week, like, we got to ask ourselves, why did last week this little white woman in Europe who lives on an island capture the world's attention, you know, while she, after she died, they called her Elizabeth. Why do we call her the queen? There are many queens on this earth. There are many kings on earth. There are kings and queens in Africa. But we call her the queen. That tiny little island with that tiny little woman who presided over some of the worst atrocities of the 20th century that was under her rule. The slaughter of the Mau Mau Rebellion in Kenya in the early 1950s is just an example one. The invasion of the Falkland Islands. I could go on and on. And we were saying, oh, the queen, oh, she's wonderful. And, oh, God, we got to just spend a week on television, you know, worshiping the queen. So I think that, you know, Neely Fuller talks about, Marimba Anee talks about in Yoruba why all of the institutions, the religious institutions, the healthcare industry, the political institutions, the law and justice, all of these institutions are there to perpetuate and expand white supremacy.
True indeed. No,
you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here. Yeah. What I was saying that I think it's like Dr. Francis West's last speaking engagement before she defied demise. She was doing an event called Divine God Principle in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. In May 2015, Dr. Marie Renee opened up for her, right? And also Professor Dr. Kamau Kambong was there as well, you know, and they were one of the most interesting times I ever had in my life in regards to being it around in the midst of three strong African African social science in one particular place, right? Actually, I had a conversation with all three of them on different occasions while I was there, right? Those are phenomenal feeling to me, you know, you know, to actually experience that.
If you were had all of them and listened to all of them, man, that's a treat. That's beyond the treat. I mean, that's just it. The whole their word. Francis is the only person that I and Marimba that I could listen to for 2 or 3 hours and say, "Give me some more." And I think that's important, you know, for us to listen to our elders, John Henry Clark, and read them. You know, and when we read, you know, it's almost like scales fall off your brain and you can see the world in a different way. That's what's important.
True indeed. My next question is, what actually is the African personality, you know, and how does it benefit the people by knowing exactly what it is?
That's a hard. Yeah, I think the African personality is someone that puts people over objects. The European mentality values things over people. The African personality values people over things. The European personality, you know, has no reverence for life. And the African personality does. People ask me all the time, Dr. Wimbush, why we keep killing each other? You know, we always get mad when white people kill us like police and stuff like that, but we kill each other. You know, well, the difference, of course, is that one is state-sponsored when the police kill us or incarcerate us, and the other one is us doing this. Bobby Wright used to say something that is a hard, hard saying, but I believe it was true. Bobby was a black nationalist, and he used to say the reason why black people kill black people is because they have not been taught to kill white people. And, you know, when Sister Soldier said words to that effect back in the 90s, you know, white folks scared when she said that. But we have been taught, black people, and I think part of the African personality is to examine, why do we kill each other over stuff that just doesn't even make any sense? It's because we've been taught to kill each other. And the teaching is through self-hatred, seeing somebody, like Maya Angelou says, seeing somebody that looks like you, who's a black male, for example, and saying, I hate that person because I've been taught to hate that person, so I'm going to kill that person. And so the African personality has a reverence for life. The Zulu Declaration from South Africa says, I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. And so you have to see each other right now as being your brother and your sister. I think I told you when we did a show a few weeks ago that, and this is just what I do, but if I walk down the street and I see a young couple with their baby pushing them in a stroller, I always compliment them. And I say, you know, y'all are a beautiful couple. And they'll say, thank you, sir, you know, and they kind of glow. I think that we have to learn to love each other the way we did in Africa. And it wasn't that we always didn't settle our differences in a way that was violent, but the violence that is in the United States right now among us has a lot to do with how this system of white supremacy has taught us to kill each other. And as Bobby said, the reason why we kill each other is because we ain't been taught to kill white people. I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be cautious when I say it, but I don't understand why George Zimmerman is still alive. I don't understand why he's still alive. He killed Trayvon, you know, almost 10 years ago, and he's still walking the streets. I read an article the other day that he's become a millionaire, killing a young black man who just wanted some Skittles and iced tea. That was it. Now, we will, you know, I live in Baltimore. We have a high homicidal rate. We have a very high homicidal rate, in fact. Some of that anger and that hatred and that, you know, vengeance ought to be turned on other people beside us. And when we learn to really love each other, I'm talking about love your brother, love your sister, and respect each other like that, we won't do this stuff. We won't do it.
Yes, sir. You're right in the Zach. I got like one more question that we're going to find out. My next question is, when you hear the name George Jackson, what does that name mean to you in particular? What did it signify?
Yeah, just so much. I mean, immediately it stands for the month that just passed, Black August. But, you know, I think of somebody who was incarcerated unjustly, murdered unjustly, you know, by the system of white supremacy. But in his mind, he was always liberated. I lived during that time, and I've had the privilege of, you know, traveling with Angela Davis, who they had close correspondence during that time. And I think that, you know, she revered him. She cared for him as a brother and helped him and stuff. And I think of George Jackson, I think of, you know, all political prisoners a lot. How they have us still in prison, the Tulu. I mean, there's so many people. I'm not even going to begin to name them. And Jackson was kind of symbolic of all of that. It shows that you can be, in prison, in a physical prison, and still be liberated. I mean, everyone should read Soledad Brother, The Prison Letters of George Jackson. My favorite saying that George said was, it is surely past time. And I love the way he said it is surely past time for all of us to stand up and stop trembling. Grab the bull by the horn and ride him till the neck snaps. I mean, that's how we've got it. I mean, George was a strong brother. But then if you read his letters, he had sympathy for, you know, the relationship between his father, the relationship between Angela and other people. And I think that he's a role model. He said, well, you know, some people say, well, how could he be a role model? He was in prison. He was a role model for what it means to be a strong black man who was liberated in his mind and wanted us to be free as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate that. We're hitting up near a couple of 5 minutes. Next 4 minutes, what are your final thoughts you want to leave us with?
I mean, the final thoughts I want, you know, I'm glad we ended on, you know, Ancestor Jackson, because I think that we have to look at ourselves individually and collectively as an instrument of the liberation of African people. We have to say, I'm going to do that by myself if it means giving some books to black children that so that they can read. And I'm talking about not just the Three Little Pigs, but good books to little black children that they, you know, they can read. It can be, I'm going to help our people who are ill and by visiting those who are lonely. I know this sounds like going to church and stuff like that, but we've got to think of liberation as a daily thing, not an event. But we got to think of this stuff as a daily thing. We should commit to reading. I commit myself. The last thing I do before I go to bed is read. And it can be a variety of things, but I, you know, read to try to make myself a better educator to my students and a role model for our students. And I think that's the other thing is that, you know, like what did Malcolm say? He said, I'm the man you think you, I forget how that goes. You might remember, I'm the man that you think you are, or something like that. We have to be a role model for the people around us, be as men or, you know, if you're a woman, a sister, be a role model. You should be somebody that you want your children, your relatives to say, that is a person that I want to be like. So I try to do that, you know. I don't always succeed, but I do a lot of that and make sure I'm, you know, somebody that people can look up to.
True indeed, Bob. You know what I'm saying? Again, I want to thank you for coming to our platform, sharing us with understanding. I want to thank you for the work you did in the past, present, and future, right? So we salute you, you know what I'm saying? And with you here, brother. If anyone is interested in learning more about Jordan University, you can go on to our Facebook page. This is Nyan Jordan University. You can go on to our Twitter page, our Instagram page. And also, if you want to learn more, you can get in contact with me directly via email. Just bomanishikir80@gmail.com. And again, it's bomanishakur80@gmail.com. Law and the Resistance, Law and the New African Movement, through the land.
Free the land. Take care.
I didn't mean that, sir. Yes, sir.